Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, check us out, Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DOC, the Diggy Diggy motherfucking God.
Yo, what's up? This is your boy, C-Man.
What up, yo? This is E-Shot.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
It's your boy, DJ Paul KOL from 36 Block.
Young Busy Ball.
Vice One.
This your man, Mastermind of Hell, Raise Up.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Red.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross, and you listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
It's the Murder Master Music Show. Hip-hop is dead, but we don't resurrect it. You follow what lame stream says, but here it gets rejected. If you wearing tight jeans, don't expect to get respected. I'm from a time where wearing black was always on your checklist. From a time where faggots get checked if they reckless. From a time where if you got too much shine, we snatch your necklace. This real shit here, Illuminati, fuck the industry. We represent the street and they respect our street ministries. Take no shorts and cut the middleman, literally. This hip-hop savior, our birth scenes like nativity. This a place where no one sells out for relevability. And the masses can get a chance to explore more creativity. You gotta be kidding me. If you call that hip-hop, niggas with hot shades and fluorescent flip-flop. We killin' Big Brother, cause we know he watched. You don't like what I'm doing, then you can suck mine. Oh, and you don't
stop. It's the Murder Master Music Show. 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 It's the Murder Master Music Show.
Episode 298. Let me bring out my co-host, Mac J. What's up, Mac J?
What's up with it, bro?
I'll tell you what, man. It's an honor to do this show. You know what I'm saying? We're honoring the legacy of Eazy-E, but it's also an honor to honor the memory and legacy of Jerry Heller as well. Those of you that, that know, he passed away a few days ago. Yesterday, they had a beautiful service for him. I saw some clips online. Matter of fact, we got his cousin, Mr. Gary Ballin, on the line. I'm going to bring him on here in a second. He was actually on the show before. But Jerry was a huge part of this show, man. You hear him on the intro. This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that, you know, he enjoyed coming on here. And, you know, he wouldn't do interviews. He would rarely do interviews with anybody. He came on this show 4 times.
Yeah.
1 week
and
from
not
today.
Only not only the 4 times, Prez, though, like even through the 4 times, like Jerry was a cool dude as far as I know, because
he would hit
a motherfucker up. He sent inboxes. He'd comment on shit. When my pops passed, the same way, like I told, like with Ready Red. A lot of people hit me up and say, hey, hang in there, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I appreciate people that don't know me or have nothing to do with me but take time out of their day or whatever they got going on in their lives to be like, hey, look, everything going to be good, man. You straight, man. Jay, man, I like what y'all doing. Like, when Jerry said that shit, I believed it. Like, when he told us, Prez, he was like, shit, don't worry about what everybody else doing, because what we doing is something that's unique. You know what I'm saying?
Jerry,
like, we're not tracing trends or whatever.
Jerry's a real dude. The last time he was on the show, I mean, next Thursday, a week from today, we're going to celebrate episode 300. The last time Jerry was on the show was to call in and congratulate us on episode 200. He took time out. This was right after an operation. Day or two after an operation. He still picked up the phone and called in and congratulated us. Man. Hey, anybody that, you know what I'm saying, that actually had a chance to get to know him or talk to him, even if it was through Facebook or like you said on the phone. It was an honor. I'm gonna bring on his cousin Gary right now. Gary, we're terribly sorry for your loss that you and your family had to endure. How are you holding up under these circumstances?
I'm holding up very well because we got a lot of love from a lot of people from all over the country that spanned over five decades. You know, Jerry started in the music business in the 60s. So there were people at the funeral there and knew him in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010, 2016. So there's not a lot of people that had that span of staying in the game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and like you said, they went back to the 60s. And, you know, you guys laid him to rest the day Eazy-E was born. And that's probably right around the time Jerry's career started, I would imagine, or shortly after Eazy-E was born. And the two of them, I mean, their lives were synonymous. You know, they really were like father and son. What was your recollection like as far as the relationship between Jerry and Eazy?
Well, you know, me being Jerry's cousin and in the music business myself, you know, he used to play me the tapes of Straight Outta Compton, Gangsta Gangsta, Boys in the Hood, before they were records. You know, so
yeah.
I got to hear this stuff. I was in the heavy metal management at the time, and you know, I saw the whole thing develop from the beginning, and he believed in it so much. You know, I thought he was crazy. I said, man, you can't say fuck the police.
Yeah.
You know, you're not gonna play these records on the radio. You're not gonna be able to tour anywhere. And he said, no, man, you got it wrong. He said, this is gonna be the biggest music ever. This is gonna, they're the Rolling Stones of rap.
Yeah,
he take
said
over
that
rock
on the show
and roll.
Too. Yep, he
yeah,
said that.
Yeah, and well, it's true. And so, you know, I got to see it all happen. And I was the first production manager on the tour in 89, 90, you know, on their first tour. So I helped Eazy and the guys design their stage, you know, and sound and lights and all that. And I was on the road with them. So, you know, for me, it was just, it was mind-blowing because I wasn't into rap at all. I didn't know anything about it. You know, I'm more of a classic rock, Beatles, Eagles kind of guy. But
yeah.
I loved what was going on, man. I loved the energy. I loved it was cutting edge. It was new. It was fresh. The guys told what was happening in the streets. People didn't believe it, you know, that police were beating up on people until they saw the Rodney King video, you know.
Yeah.
Now they see it all the time. So these guys were truly amazing, and, you know, I was honored to be a part of that whole NWA, you know, experience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely. And it's, I mean, you know, a huge, huge deal that has spanned decades. And just like Jerry's career, it went back, you know, like you said, Creedence Clearwater Revival,
mm-hmm.
Marvin Gaye, Journey. So many, you know, multi-platinum acts and legendary bands, even before N.W.A., he was affiliated with.
Yeah, way before.
Yeah,
like Pink Floyd, bringing Pink Floyd to their first U.S. tour, Elton John to his first U.S. tour, you know, the Grassroots, Guess Who, Van Morrison, you know, the Brown Eyed Girl, all this stuff, and he was the man. I mean, he was one of the main guys at that time, and it's funny because when I was in high school, back in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
I came out and stayed with him for a couple weeks in L.A. It was 1969. And, you know, totally blew my mind, changed my life. You know,
I bet you're coming from the Midwest, going out here to California and kicking it with your cousin while he doing his thing. I know they had to blow your mind.
Oh, it was incredible because I was like a football player, musician, you know, Ohio State Buckeye, you know. I mean, I was into sports stuff, but I had no clue about this, how intoxicating this music scene was. And he was right in the middle of it, and he took me everywhere with him. And I got to meet, like, the lead singer of the Animals, Eric Burdon. you know. Mm-hmm. And Marvin Gaye lived in the same complex he lived in, you know. So it was just crazy, you know. And you know, he's always been there for me, and you know, he really changed my life.
Yeah, yeah. He changed the lives of many people, and he made it possible for people to do, you know, what they're able to do today. Unfortunately, the media doesn't portray him, and not just the media, people that he actually helped. They don't portray him mm-hmm. in the light that he should be portrayed in. And I always felt that after he passed, you know, no one really mentioned him for years, you know, besides Bone. Why do you think Easy and Jerry get this this negative stigmata when they did so much for so many people?
Well, you know, I could answer that question, but I'll tell you what's funny. It's like at the memorial, you know, you had Easy's son just saying how much he loved Jerry. You had
right.
Shari Henry, Easy's assistant, was with him every day, how much
right.
she loved Jerry and how much Easy loved Jerry. You know, you had Irving Azoff, you know, one of the most
mm-hmm.
powerful men in the music business, and he just slammed the movie. Everybody slammed the movie at the eulogy. It was really kind of funny. And then, like, today, there's a Forbes magazine had an article that said, did Jerry Heller really steal from NWA? So
yeah,
we've
really seen that.
It's really going to start coming out more now that he's passed away, unfortunately. And really, the real true story is going to come out, because all the people that were close to him in those days, the director, F. Gary Gray, and the producers,
mm-hmm.
nobody talked to anybody that was there except Ice Cube told a story he wanted to tell. Cube,
right.
Dre told his story he wanted to tell. And Tamika told her story she wanted to tell. You know,
right.
So much false information. But it's all going to come to light now. It's not over. It's just begun.
Right.
And
nice rendition of Gangsta Gangsta at the memorial, too, man. I saw you on social media, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I never saw anybody play Boys in the Hood with a guitar and then go into You Are My Sunshine. I mean,
yeah.
just transition into it beautifully, like it was like the two meshed together. I mean,
yeah, that was perfect.
Well,
yeah.
You know, to be honest, man, I've been doing that for a long time. You know, I'm a performer myself out here in L.A. So
mm-hmm.
I've been doing these songs ever since I worked for NWA. So I got this down real well, you know, this mashup. Jerry loved it. That's why I did it. Jerry loved You Are My Sunshine, and he loved when I did any NWA or Eazy-E. So, you know, that was a tribute to him, and it worked at the gravesite. People loved it.
Yeah, you know what tripped me out a little bit was, and I've seen videos because I got several friends and contacts on social media that was at Jerry's funeral, but something that struck me was I seen Daz Dillinger from the Dog Pound there.
Yeah,
and I remember at one point where it's even a video or a clip on YouTube where Daz and Easy was going back and forth when Easy had the Ruthless Radio Show or whatever, and I thought that was real noble for a guy, because on the outside looking in, we would think that any of the Death Row guys probably wouldn't have no dealings with Jerry, but to see somebody like Daz at the memorial and everything, man, that had to say something about Jerry. At least to me, it did.
Yeah.
Well, you're right, and there's a lot of people like that were involved. You know, either with Cube or Dre or Death Row or whatever, but they knew the truth. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you know the truth, you know, Jerry was so colorblind. Jerry could care less if you're black or you're white. You know, Jerry fought for Eazy-E. Eazy owned the company. You know, Eazy was the guy. Ice Cube turned on him first. And, you know, give me a couple minutes to talk about Ice Cube, because, you know, I was the production manager on the first tour. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my eyes, the reason why Ice Cube left the group, you know, it wasn't Jerry that broke up NWA, and it wasn't Brian Turner for Priority. Nobody broke up NWA. You know, Ice Cube was a disenchanted employee. you know, he was jealous of these. Easy had all the money, all the women, all the attention. Ice Cube was not hard. You know, Easy was hard. Ren was hard. Ice Cube, you know, he went to high school at Taft High in the suburbs. He was a great lyricist, a great rapper, and a great actor, because he acted even then like he was a gangbanger and he was hard and all this, but that wasn't Ice Cube. So after the first tour, you know, his manager at the time and Brian Turner from Priority, you know, they kind of, you know, he wanted to go out solo, you know, so he, you know, he blamed it on Jerry the White Devil and all that, but he was going to go anyway, you know. He wanted to go solo, and Brian Turner said, you know, he was the accomplice. You know, look, mm-hmm. I'll give you your own label. I'll give you this advance. You be the boss. So, you know, of course he took it. You know, I don't have any, you know, problems with that, because that's business. You know,
right.
But when they started attacking Jerry as the white Jew that broke up the crew and put a bullet in his temple and this kind of stuff, you know, not only was that very anti-Semitic, but you know, it made Jerry look like a thief. Okay, and then when Shug came along, you know, who, again, I was there for all this. You know, Shug mm-hmm. was a DOC bodyguard. You know, and Shug came into the camp and convinced Dre to leave. You know, and it wasn't about Dre not making enough money or anything. It was about Dre having his own company, being the boss, and all that. You know, so, you know, that's
basically,
and those guys
basically,
all,
it was all about everybody wanting to be like Easy. We want Easy.
Exactly. If we want Easy, yeah. Easily I approach the microphone because I ain't no joke.
Exactly.
Now your mama took it off of my tip. I have no time to give her my dick. That was Easy. You know, everyone wanted to be Easy. I wanted
yep.
to be Easy. I mean, he was amazing.
I did too. I did
yeah.
too.
And
you
he was the nicest guy. I'm telling you, man, Easy was the nicest, kindest cat. But I also saw him knock out with one punch some 300-pound dude that was in one of our video shoots. So, you know, Easy was not one to fuck with.
Yeah. Right. Easier said than done. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Easy does it. Get your motherfucking ass
guy,
not clean
got,
the fuck out.
We got the homie Clientele on the line as well. How you doing, Clientele?
Yo, yo, what's up, man? How's it going,
what's
guys?
What's up, Brother Clyde? What's going on, man?
What's up? What's up, Jay? What's up, Prez? What's up, Gary? How you doing, man?
Good.
Good, man. I got to go back into this meeting, man, but I just wanted to really, you know, kind of chime in a little bit and just really co-sign a lot of what Gary was saying, because, you know, for those of us who were around, you know, in the beginning back in the day, you know, who knew, you know, somebody knowing Easy and knowing Cube and knowing Dre and everybody else, and growing up with those guys, you know, I would say that, you know, Dre is an accomplished producer. You know, Ice Cube was a hell of a lyricist and rapper. But, you know, none of us were street cats. I mean, we grew up around a lot of street dudes. We knew a lot of street dudes. But, you know, we wasn't about that life. And I'll be the first one to admit that, because, you know, I'm more about, you know, trying to uplift the community and do positive things. And, you know,
right. Later
on in his life, Easy was like that, too. And I got to tell you something, man, about Jerry that a lot of people don't know. Jerry was a civil rights person. You know, he like Gary said, he did not see color. I could call Jerry anytime, you know, day or night. He'd pick up the phone. He'd give me business advice. He'd talk to me about anything and everything. And, you know, when a lot of people start saying a lot of stuff about Jerry, he wasn't the kind of person that would back down or shy away when you questioned him about things. And that was a point where I pressed him on some things, you know, that people were saying about him in the media and other folks were saying about him, you know, calling him this
mm-hmm.
and calling him that. And he was honest with me, and he was upfront, and he said, look, Clientele, how could I, you know, it took two signatures on those Ruthless Records accounts. How could I rip anybody off when there were two signatures required on that stuff, you know, and it wasn't in my nature to even do something like that. Jerry would go to, if you were his friend, he would go to bat for you. He would fight for you. And that's what he was about. He fought for Easy. He made sure that NWA got into certain doors that they couldn't get into. They were stuck at a certain level, man, before Jerry came into the picture and really started pushing, you know, and getting into those doors that they couldn't normally get into. Jerry, he managed us, the Wrecking Crew, you know, for
right.
He helped us to, you know, break into a lot of areas that we normally couldn't get into, you know, just seeing our faces in there. So, you know, for somebody, for people to say, well, you know, he was just all about this certain agenda or that certain agenda, it's bullshit because they don't really know him. They don't really know the real person,
exactly.
You know, that Jerry was. And I just wanted to really chime in on that, man, and let people really know that, no, Jerry was not a racist. He was not the white Jew devil that a lot of people – and trust me, I'm one of the most conscious third-eye type brothers you'd ever meet. And if he was like that, I'd be the first to tell somebody. But I got to be honest, Jerry, as a person, was a cool dude. He was a businessman, and he would tell you straight up, you know, what he felt about business, and that's really what I learned a lot from him. He was a mentor and a friend, and, you know, I'll miss him, and I just want to, you know, say, you know, big ups to him and, you know, best wishes and condolences to the family, and, you know, that's really what I wanted to chime in and say to everybody, man. So, you know, that's really what time it is.
Right.
Thank you, Clay. Thank you.
Right.
No doubt.
Thank
you. No doubt.
And let me throw one more thing in. If Jerry would have done anything inappropriate, they would have sued him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Ice Cube had plenty of money. He could have sued Jerry. Dr. Dre, he was a millionaire. He could have sued Jerry.
Right.
You know, because that's what
even Cube himself always said that I never signed. You know, they never screwed. They never really took nothing from me because I never signed. I didn't sign with them. I always thought that, like, if you didn't sign with them, I always felt like these dudes just stick to their gun because they don't want to look. They don't want to have a pie in their face. You
right.
see what I'm saying? Because if we
right.
was to go off what we just heard, like me and Prez from the Midwest, and we younger than them, but we come up under them. So if we was just to go off what we see and what they showed us, or if we
right.
pick sides or whatever. Like we didn't do research on our own, we would always think that, man, these dudes fucked them over. But then you find out you're doing the same business practices that everybody else did. It was just, I think that after he dissed them, he just had to stick with it. Because he act, you know, some people, actors, they got to stick to the script.
You know, it's like this movie now. It's the same thing. You know, it's like the movie. There are so many inaccuracies in that movie. You know, Jerry, Easy didn't come to Jerry's house and fire him. That never happened. Easy really never fired him. He got a letter in the mail from who knows who, but he never fired him. Easy didn't get beat up by Suge and these guys in the studio. Never happened. You know, there's so many things in there that just never happened, you know, but they put it out there, so now they're going to have to, you know, stick by what they said. But,
right.
you know, there's the lawsuit's going to continue. There's a movie coming that's going to continue about Jerry and Easy and all that, you know, and Jerry's got so much support now that he didn't have before, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm about to say, unfortunately. I hate it's like that because, for real, Jerry, in my eyes, Jerry was cool. I wish I would have had the opportunity to dive into Easy before he passed, but obviously we were super young when that happened. But it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, the stories is all the same from the people that was really around. Like, yeah, you know what you can see when you Google it. But when you talk to people that was really around these guys, it's all the same story. Even I seen a video
I've
with Michelle A. saying, like, even Michelle A. was like, if it wasn't for Jerry, we couldn't have nothing. And she was like, Jerry made sure we got paid. He made sure that we had the money for the house notes. We had this, we had that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, HWA, they had nothing but nice things to say about Jerry Heller.
Many groups. Doug Young, I mean, look, if you would have been at the funeral and saw who was around the casket, you know, Doug Young, African-American, you know, our promotion guy, Mustafa Khan, a Muslim,
right.
who was Jerry's security guy like 20 years ago before NWA, Kenny
right.
Copeland from Rolls-Royce, you know, car wash, you know, Irving Azoff.
Adrian Gregory, yeah.
Adrian Gregory, man, of course, our road manager, man, who we all loved, and you know, these are people that were all there and knew it. You know, it's just Ice Cube and Dre had the money, had the power, and they could get the story out easier. And it was, and Jerry really didn't have, you know, the means to fight. You know, he could talk in interviews and stuff, But, you know, these guys really made him look terrible.
Yeah, and the movie pointed that out. I mean, we talked to Jerry, you know, before the movie. We always asked him, do you think it's going to be accurate? Are they getting your input? And he always says, well, they're not getting my input. They're not talking to me at all. When I heard that, I automatically knew, okay, this is going to be a Cube and Dre production. And that's what it was. You know, and I think it's wrong to only get the views of just a handful of people and not the majority of the people. You didn't hear nothing about BG Knockout, Dreista, you didn't hear Above the Law.
Dreista was at the funeral.
They didn't even have J.J. Fad in the movie.
They didn't have any of those guys. You know, Rhythm D was at the funeral, you know. Big Animal, Security. And I'll tell you one other thing, man. This stuff about Tamika and, you know, looking at his finances and seeing that Jerry was stealing from him and he was broke, that is so insane. I mean, Easy still had the NWA catalog. He had Bone Thugs and Harmony. You know, he still had Ruthless Records. You know, he owns three houses. He always had $2,000 or $3,000 in his sock. I mean, And you know, so, you know, for Tamika to portray herself, you know, as the savior, he would have never married her in a million years.
I remember last time you were on the show, you were talking about how he was actually you were his to go guy when one of his side chicks would hit him up.
Yeah,
he would. You would have to help him out with that. Yeah.
With the phone card, exactly. You know, phone card. You know, towards the end, right before he got sick, he did a project with Troutman. You know, from the Zap Band. And before I picked him up at the airport, he had me pick up this beautiful woman. You know, I mean, you know, Eric would have. He would have never married Tamika. He had so many other women other than her at that time. But, I mean, he respected her because she was intelligent. She worked for Clarence Avon. She was good-looking. Right. But by far, she married
him.
Easy
was fucking Mickey Howard and all kinds of motherfuckers back then.
I mean, you know.
Like, damn.
Yeah, he had all shapes, all colors, all sizes. Easy was a monster. But I wanted to say one more thing. She married him on his deathbed, you know, and he never signed the marriage certificate. I got a copy of it. So, you know, that was all janky back in those
days. Hey guys, I got to get back into this meeting, but, man, I just wanted to, you know, say, man, keep up the good work. And, Gary, I'm going to holler at you, man. I'm going to give you a call real soon because I got some things that I want to talk to you about. So you guys take care
yourself,
and just keep it up, man. All right.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Peace, bro. Yeah, shout out to Clientele. Always good to have him on the line on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many inaccuracies. A couple days ago, Jerry's attorney said that he believes Straight Outta Compton, the movie, actually caused his death, caused him to get sick. Did you notice... because you being probably one of the closest to him, if not the closest to him, did you notice a decline in his health after the movie came out?
Definitely. I mean, you know, it was like a slow grind for him, you know, from the breakup of the band, and then knowing that the movie was going to come out, and then when the movie came out, and then, you know, knowing how many people saw the movie, and how bad he looked in the movie, you know. I mean, the stress level on it was incredible. So, I mean, I'm not saying that the movie killed him like the lawyer is, but it sure did. It sure did affect him in a real bad way for a long time.
Right. It affected his way of life for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before I saw the film, I inboxed Jerry because I knew he had went and saw the film, and I asked him, I said, did they do you any justice, Jerry? And he says, not a chance, man. And then a few days later, I saw the film, and I knew exactly what the hell he was talking about. I was like, wow, you know. And I respect Paul Giamatti because I always liked him as an actor. He was great in Cinderella Man. when you hire an actor, usually, especially when the person is living at the time, usually you want to go talk to him, kind of like how Johnny Depp did with Boston George when he did that movie Blow. You know, you want to go talk to the guy and get his mannerisms down and get inside his head. None of that happened.
Yeah.
I wonder if they stayed away
from Barry. Oh, of course, because they didn't want Paul Giamatti to know the real story, the real Jerry Heller. They told him how to act. You know, I mean, the guy's like a foot shorter than Jerry. You know, and he always plays scumbags. You know,
he plays freaking or something, or John Adams.
Yeah,
I mean, he's real short. You know, Jerry's is a big tall fella, and there's a lot of inaccuracies in the movie, but I hope that there definitely is some type of justice for Jerry's legacy, because his legacy is, as a manager in the music business, is untouchable. People don't even realize what the man has done. I mean, I get in these arguments with people on the YouTube page all the time, you know, that make some wisecrack comments, and I'll come in there and be like, point blank, no Jerry Heller, no Eazy-E, there's no successful N.W.A., no Dre, no 50 Cent, no Eminem, no Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube.
It's a whole bunch of motherfuckers that couldn't hate.
I'm not
if
saying
Jerry
those guys wouldn't have gotten fame or success, you know what I'm saying, on their own at some point in their lives, because, you know, anything's possible. But it wouldn't have happened the way it did, and these guys wouldn't be multimillionaires and some of them even billionaires if it wasn't for those two men. And that's real shit.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll tell you what. The accurate part of the movie, there was a lot of accurate parts of the movie too. Jerry always fought for those guys. Jerry couldn't get a record deal on any major label. Everyone passed on him, you know, so he had to go to the California Raisins, you know, Brian Turner, Priority, who had no real music acts at all, you know, so he kind of went out through the side door because they had distribution, you know. So, you know, and only Jerry could have done that and then turned it into what he did. And then to find the promoters to do the tours and to, and to get the promotion and all that stuff. You know, between him and Eazy, you know, we had so many great years and made so much money. No Ice Cube thing, you know, it was a blip on the screen because it didn't stop us. You know, we kept rolling. You know,
For Life, Ryan, the first number one gangster rap album. So, it did better than Straight Outta Compton.
And even when Dre left, and Death Row was there, if Eazy would have stayed well, it would have kept rolling. I mean, Bone was rolling.
Oh yeah.
And, you know.
And I think Bone could have got bigger with Eazy. I think they would have been like Bone was big anyway after Eazy, but I'd be thinking that if Eazy was still around, Bone could have. Ain't no telling what Bone arguably is the best rap group since N.W.A.
Yeah, and Flesh, who I managed for 12 years, he was at the funeral too.
Because they changed the
gang. Shout out to Flesh.
Yeah.
You managed Flesh, huh?
I managed Flesh. After he was in prison about 8 of the 12 years, I managed him though. But I really liked Stanley. Yeah, I mean it was crazy. You know, those days are so crazy. But we had a deal at Death Jam. His first album was on Def Jam.
Yep.
And
Don't Let Loose. I remember all that shit.
Run DMC. Yeah.
Run DMC. Right. I was in that video.
Yeah. You were in that video, Gary?
I was in that video.
I gotta go back and check that.
Yeah.
Oh wow. You were the fireman in that video. Oh man.
Yeah.
See, you learned something.
But I'll tell you one more thing. Yeah. Let me tell you one more thing. We had Will.i.am. You know, we had the app band playing.
We had
Black Eyed Peas before they were the Black Eyed Peas. So, you know, signs to us. You know, and that was through Terry Heller. That was through Jerry's nephew, Terry.
Right.
You know?
I talked to Terry last night a little bit. Hopefully he called in. He might call in.
Yeah, Terry's great, man. You know, Terry grew up in the hip-hop, you know, and so, and he was with Jerry all the time as a little kid. So, he knows so much about it, and he produced and directed so many of our videos, you know, Bone Thugs and Harmony and various and then he turned into a very successful video director, then a very successful real estate guy, and now he owns 4 restaurants, you know, Plan Check, that he's got all over L.A., and Terry's kicking ass.
Yeah, that's you know, I thought so definitely with Terry as well. It's a shame because, you know, no one expected this. And what was it like at the hospital? Was there a lot of people there? I mean,
no, it was only. I was with my girlfriend Mary Lou driving from Oxnard, where I lived, to L.A. Halfway there, Terry Heller calls me about 1 o'clock. Says, "Hey man, Jerry had a heart attack. You know, he's in Los Robles Hospital in Thousand Oaks." His brother Kenny was there, and his wife, and me and Mary Lou went, and Terry was there. So that's kind of, and a couple of Terry's kids came a little later. But that's all that was at the hospital. And, you know, I'm a performer, so I had to sing that night. So he never regained consciousness. They had him on life support. You know, his heart stopped a couple times. He probably lost, oxygen to the brain. And I had to leave about 6 o'clock, and I was going to come back at about midnight. But Terry, he texted me at about 11 and said, "Man, he's gone."
Damn.
That was it. Yeah,
yeah,
it was so, so sad.
Yeah, everybody's shocked. You know, and again, our thoughts go out to you and the family, and, you know. Also,
2016
also,
been a wild-ass year for this shit, man.
Wow. Yeah, it is.
Like
yeah,
I said, my dad passed in February, man. A lot of people contacted me, hit me up. But, like, to get inboxes from, like, Ready Red from the Ghetto Boys and Jerry Heller to say, "Hey, man, you know, life is life, you know what I'm saying, cherish the memories and stuff." I'm going to do the same thing with Jerry, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's noble shit to me, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he really liked you guys. He really liked you guys. He's, you know, when you guys first, I don't listen to much hip-hop radio or any of it, really. It's really not my life. But when you guys first contacted me, I asked him about you, and he really liked you guys. You know, so, you know, you guys were like family to him, is how he, you know, is what how he told me. So, you know, if you're family to him, you're family to me.
Real talk.
Okay.
Real talk, man. Yep. Definitely. Yeah, Jerry was real humble individual. And he'd be missed by many, many people. And you know, our thoughts also go out to Eazy-E and his family, you know, Eazy-E's family, I mean, because you know, it's 21 years since they lost you know, their father. And,
right.
You know, they got to go through life without him, you know what I'm saying? And Jerry was one of those connections to their father. So I imagine they're really hurting right now, too.
Yeah.
You know, because that's another thing that's another argument I always bring up when people talk shit or whatnot. I always say, Easy's kids loved them.
Right.
That should be all the justification you need. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. You know,
I mean,
I've
seen articles where they're getting comments from O.J. Jackson Jr., you know, and you know, a little arrogant. He's being a little, you know, it's like, who the hell are you, though? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
All you know is what your father told you, you know? So,
He grew up with the silver spoon in his mouth.
And
they
really
grew up privileged.
Exactly.
And but you said Jerry's story is going to be told. Is there a movie in the works or anything that's going on we can look forward to?
Here what's going on. There's two things going on. Today I talked to a producer. Jerry had already had in place and ready to sign a movie deal about the book Ruthless, which was a book of his life. You know, from being a baby till he died. I mean, till, you know, well, not till he died, but now till he died. You know, but till the whole Ruthless thing, they already had a very famous director. They already had some A-list actors picked out. They already had the money behind it. They already had the screenwriter, you know, and Jerry was ready to sign and get a big advance to start working on that movie. Now, that's one thing. The other thing is a documentary on just the NWA Eazy-E story. There were so many people. We had four cameras at the funeral, and they took interviews of everybody, you know, from the 80-year-old guys, you know, to the teenagers, and
right.
So many of the real stories are going to start coming out now about, you know, what, you know, again, about what really happened, about the people that were there. So, you know, there's a couple projects that I think Terry is going to continue, you know, to pursue as, you know, being the estate of Jerry. And, you know, it's up to us to keep the name alive, to clear his name from the bullshit that was, you know, perpetrated on him from the movie and Ice Cube and, you know, Dre. So you know, it's like I said, this is only the beginning. This is like chapter two.
Yeah, it's good to hear that. It's good to see that.
And the lawsuit.
Be...
And the lawsuit. The lawsuit is not going away because he's dead. You know, the lawsuit is going to continue on. And I know that Ice Cube and Dr. Dre are not going to want to do depositions about that, about what really happened.
Yeah, because they could be getting in a whole shitload of trouble if they're not telling the truth. Which, you know, we pretty much have the. I mean, I can't say. I know Jerry from you know, doing the show and whatnot and talking to him, you know. But I can't just deem them guilty right off the bat. You know what I'm saying? I got to be careful so I don't get sued. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not saying from all the evidence that I've heard from everybody, for like yourself, all the people we interviewed, all the guests, everyone said Jerry did everybody right. I mean,
he did.
I'm going by what I hear.
Yeah. You know. You can't believe what Ice, you know, Ice Cube did. Everything Ice Cube did and said was for his own, you know, further his career. Just like same thing with Dre. And, you know, look what happened to Dre. I mean, again, to me, Dre's the greatest, you know, hip-hop producer ever. But look what Suge did to him. You know, look what Suge did to all those guys. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean,
but Dre did,
exactly. That's never brought up to that level. You know, Dre, I don't know what his deal is, you know what I'm saying? You see NWA, as far as Ren and Yella, and now Cube, they're doing shows together, but why not bring Little Easy on there, or E3, you know what I mean? Why not tour, you know, like the Beatles, they toured with Julian Lennon, I believe. Why not do that with Easy's kids? I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. And Dre, obviously, he doesn't even have no part in no tour. You don't see him doing nothing with it.
Dre doesn't need to do anything, you know. Dre likes to be in the studio. He likes to be on the yachts, the boats, and going, you know, traveling the world. I mean, he's a billionaire now. So, you know, he's in the rarefied air that none of us can really relate to, you know.
No, he's in the 1% now. he's in a whole different bracket.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'll tell you, man, I tell you, though, at the beginning, man, I loved those guys. I loved working with them. You know, they, especially Dre, Easy, Jerry, they always had houses close to each other. They'd always buy cars together. You know, I mean, when they were coming up, you know, it was a lot of fun and we had a great time. And, you know, it's just a shame that that didn't last forever, but, you know, nothing lasts forever.
No, but what Jerry did is set in stone. His legacy is there. Eazy-E's legacy is there, and what they did for all those other guys is there as well. Because like we said earlier in the show, if it wasn't for those two guys, there wouldn't be none of the others. And it's real talk. And people recognize that. People recognize it. It's just a matter of, you know, most of the people that saw Straight Outta Compton weren't even born when the album Straight Outta Compton came out. You know?
Right.
So they're
naturally
going to believe that. And that, you know, it's an unfortunate thing, but I'm glad they're going to be able to tell Jerry's story. And going back to, you know, the youth. I mean, that's going to be amazing in itself to show how he came up in the game, how he got his connections, made the moves that he made. That should be very interesting. And this documentary you're talking about now, is that on Jerry's life as well, or is it Easy and Jerry? Or?
Well, you know, again, it's nothing set in stone yet, but that, you know, we're just talking about things now. And the main thing is to get the truth out about what happened, you know, the truth about that NWA movie, what really happened. You know, let's look at the things that actually didn't happen in the movie, and let's look and see, tell what really happened, so at least people can judge and see, you know, what really makes the most sense here, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, movies aren't always accurate, of course. You could stretch things out at times, but, you know, to say that Jerry would be crying and Easy come over and him crying, you know, that is so, Jerry was a badass, man. Jerry was one badass motherfucker just like Eazy-E was, you know?
There's a lot of, you know, from what I heard over the years from just interviewing people and talking to different folks, there's a lot of stuff that was left out. And just being a fan, I mean, you know, I remember when all the music came out, buying the stuff at the record stores, they left out so many classic albums in that movie, you know what I mean? And the beef tracks, of course, they made sure they had No Vaseline and Dre Day, but you didn't hear It's On or Real Motherfucking G's, you know, none of that stuff.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
But I'll tell you what, we're going to go off with some Easy tracks. Gary, once again, I'm terribly sorry for your loss. And
thank you.
Man, I wish you the best. And anytime you want to join us on the show, you're more than welcome, man. More than welcome.
Well, next time we got something not exciting to talk about, I'll give you a call and we'll talk about it.
That's what's up, Gary. You take care of yourself, man.
Right on.
And also, let me just shout out to my... If you want to, you know, learn anything about me, my website, www.garyballin.com. Because I'll tell you what I'm working on right now. I mean, a couple things, but I'm working on a documentary on the Negro Baseball Leagues that I've been working on for 10 years. And I got Lou Gossett Jr.
And...
Yeah, Josh Gibson, you know, Cool Papa Bell.
Even Jackie Robinson before he was in the majors.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson. All that stuff. It's called The Untold Truth. So that's another website, theuntoldtruth.com. And we got Lou Gossett Jr. Lou Gossett Jr. is a partner and the narrator. We got a contract for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City. We already shot 25 hours of high def. You know, it's a great project. And, you know, Jerry was really behind helping me, you know, with that whole thing, too. But it's kind of something.
Yeah, there's some of the best baseball players in history you're talking about there. You know, Satchel
Paige
was one of the best pitchers, if not the best ever.
And
so,
a guy named Josh Gibson was like the black Babe Ruth. He would hit balls out of Yankee Stadium. I mean, these guys were monsters, and they couldn't play in the major leagues because they were black. You know, but they could go to war and they could fight for America and they come back and they're not allowed to play in the major leagues.
Not allowed to play baseball,
and,
not allowed to vote, not allowed to
drink
water.
Yeah, and there were areas that they would get lynched. I mean, they played baseball and if they went in the wrong area, they could end up being lynched. I mean, that's how crazy America was back then. And these are all things that we, you know, are going to be in our documentary. It's it'll be very, very cool.
And what's the website for that again?
That's called The Untold Truth, www.theuntoldtruth, because There's so many things that the Negro League started that Major League Baseball took credit for. Again, you know, it's the white man, you know, keeping the black man down one more time. You know, they were playing slave. The slaves were playing baseball in the fields way before Abner Doubleday, so-called, discovered baseball. You know,
yeah,
the batting helmet.
Yeah,
batting helmet
huge.
Started in the Negro. Batting helmet started in the Negro Leagues. A night baseball started in the Negro Leagues. The fast play, the stealing home, you know, the exciting playing, all that started in the Negro Leagues. And that's why we call it the Untold Truth.
Wow. And like I live in St. Louis, and I'm a Cubs fan, so you get all these Cardinal fans talking about how many championships they won. I always be saying, like, before they integrated the leagues, you can't count none of them championships for real, because it was one-sided affair before it was an even playing field of letting different people. How can you say they're the best baseball players in the world when you got a whole nother league with guys just as good or even better?
Yeah,
look how many times
Babe Ruth
struck out.
Like you got the Latin guys that can play baseball good too, like that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That was another part of it. And the other cool thing was all the ball players wanted to be jazz musicians. All the jazz musicians wanted to be ball players. They all hung out together, you know, at 12th Street and Vine in Kansas City. You know, so and all the cities that had Negro Baseball League teams, they had great economy. You know, they had hotels, barbershop, all kind of stuff. Oprah's father was a barber in the Negro Leagues. Jesse Jackson was a bat boy. Tiger Woods' father was the first black college player to play in, like, the mid to the Big 12, you know, with Texas and Arkansas, all these real racist schools. So there's so many stories, you know, with people, you know, now from now, were their ancestors, you know, were part of the Negro Leagues.
Right.
And
that's going to be
and the way our
and
the way our documentary is going to be different is, it's not going to be like that one of those old-fashioned, slow. It's going to be a lot of current music, political actors talking about the Negro Leagues. So you get Snoop Dogg talking about Satchel Paige. Get Kobe Bryant talking about Jackie Robinson, you know. You get Oprah talking about FMA Manley, who was the first black female owner of a team. So,
right.
You know, that's kind of how we're going to do it.
Right.
No.
I'm looking forward to that.
As Steve Lobel says, we working.
Yeah, most definitely. Nobody can sing Boys in the Hood like you with a guitar, I tell you. Keep doing what you're doing, Gary.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And, you know what I'm saying, we look forward to having you on many times in the future. You take care of yourself, man.
All right, man. We love you guys.
Much respect, man.
All right. Thank you.
UGS alike.
My alternative, it's the juice of the radio, taking out profanity, so they can play it though, listen to the hell of a kick, and the hi-hat, going to the record store, say you're gonna buy that the E is connected to the A and the Z, and say why, well that's how to be, back it up on material, made of hits, taking my time with each line, to make sure it fits, push play on the instrumental that's recorded, step on stage and I'm suddenly awarded, some sort of trophy appeared like a plaque, and some hell of a scream from the girls in the back, taking a bow, cause I got style, never at the bottom of ways, on the top of the pile, yo, it's on top, even though I'm short, guaranteed the house when I walk in the court. So get out, make some noise for the gangster clap. Don't attempt to laugh, I'm not a prankster. I'm serious, raise my sound, quit playing.
need water to clear my throat. Come from the rear and show I'm like dancing, nasty like, and the girls are like glancing. One that gets with me, it's routine, keeping them strong, but still stand mean. Can you resist this man? I don't think so. Once I start riding away, I let the ink go, coming up with songs like, yeah, that's a hit, cause it's legit, and yours ain't shit. Making the song so dope, cause I'm a genius, but you're amazed when you're happy to see this brother go crazy on wax, blowing away like if I was on a sack, doing a solo in the shade of a spotlight, relax and chill, while you're uptight, pumping up the funky sound. So you should know it's common sense that the E is gonna break it down.
Yeah, I'm going to break it down. That's always been one of my favorite Eazy-E tracks. Eazy does it. Once again, shout out to Gary Ballin. Shout out to the homie Clientele for coming through tonight. We just do a little tribute show, man. Just chop it up a little bit and pay our homage and respects to two legends in the music industry. Tomorrow night, Ben Westhoff is going to be back on the show. His new book, Original Gangsters, drops the 13th. You want to make sure you can pick that up. It'll be everywhere.
Good read, too.
What are your thoughts about the book so far?
Man, it's a good book, man. Like, for one, like me and you, we interviewed a lot of these dudes, so it's, you know what I'm saying, it's just confirmation of some of the things that we heard. But, like, for somebody that don't know and they want to really, say for instance, if I handed it to my 18-year-old son, yeah, he been hearing me talk about this shit. But if I actually gave him this book and he was reading it, I would feel like he wasn't reading bullshit. Put it like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if somebody's like, man, your son read about it, but that book ain't shit. I don't think book is that, because it goes all the way back.
Yeah. And it talks about Pac. It talks about, you know, pretty much
McCola and all that shit. You know, DLC. Like, who knows about McCola Records unless you was around back then?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you had to know, or you had to actually be, you know, buy product to know what that
was really
about.
Who's really given a couple of chapters about Ice-T or Tone Loc, or even they even had Young MC parts about him in here. Like, some people don't even know that whole history of, everybody think that the West was just started one kind of way as far as the hip hop go, but it's so deep. And I think Ben Westhoff did a good job with this book so far. I'm not done with it yet.
The article that Gary was talking about earlier on the Forbes, that was wrote by Ben as well. Hell of a writer. We had him on the show last time. And, of course, that blew up, you know, so we'll see what happens. Last night we had Big Naz out again, you know what I'm saying, Eminem's former bodyguard. It was a good show. But 1 week from tonight, episode 300, you know what I'm saying, I don't know who's going to call it. I'm not going to, you know, 100, 250, 200, all those different shows, I would hit people up and be like, yo, call in. I'm not going to do that, man. I'm just going to post up. Whoever wants to call in, they can call in. You know what I'm saying? You know, maybe I'll reach out to a couple people, but other than that, if you want to call in, you call in, man. If not, then, you know, that's cool, too. Regardless, we're celebrating the show. We might just play music, might just talk, you know, bullshit like we do, or, you know, might have a few people on the line to chop it up with, but nonetheless, 300 shows, man. That's 275 more than I thought we were going to have. So, you know, that's real talk. I thought we were done after 25.
Yeah.
You know.
250 later.
Today, I was looking through the little Facebook thing. Today was the first episode, or the 9th, or the 8th of, the 8th of September 2012 was the first episode of KFYB. I just thought, wow, that's crazy too.
I've been seeing
that. Now, you know, that's you know, that show, just like Underground Classics and Fahrenheit Hour, did its thing, you know what I mean? But now we got Underground Saturday Night. You know what I'm saying? You guys got an episode this Saturday, of course. Episode 16, I believe, in Church of Reality.
Creepy.
So we don't stop, man. We got five or six shows in a row. You know, shout out to the, you know what I'm saying, the people that support the show. Shout out to the homie Brandon, man. He's another cat that, you know what I'm saying, big supporter of the show. Dude's good people. Shout out to Scratch LVP, All Living Dead Productions. You know what I'm saying, Jack Boy D. Payne. If you need graphics, of course, UGSForLife.com. Go get graphics from Scratch, because he's killing it, man. He's knocking out stuff left and right for people, whether it's logos, even Facebook background pictures, whatever you need, he can do it. Get at him. Then, you know, Skinny Man on the Rant, that's still coming. You know what I'm saying? Skinny's going to be having that real soon. We'll have more info on that. Another Slaughter Hour is coming up pretty soon. So we're going to keep doing what we're doing, man. Other than that, time to get the fuck out of here. Rest in peace, Jerry Heller. Rest in peace to Eazy-E. Man, we're out of here. Peace.
Yeah. Gangsta Drake to the steps of this motherfucker. And this one goes out to all the OGs out there. And I can't forget the baby gangsters. What's up, nigga? My nigga that came back with some of that old school original West Coast shit, nigga. That got all y'all on the dick in the first place, yeah. So run that city, yeah.
Cruising down the street in my 6-4. Jocking the freaks, clocking the dough. Went to the park to get the scoop. Knuckleheads out there, cold shooting some hoops. A car pulls up, who can it be? A fresh El Camino rolling Kilo G. He rolled down his window and he started to say, it's all about making that GTA. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't said shit. Give me the pace. He said my man JD is on free base. The boy JD was a friend of mine till I caught him in my car trying to steal an Alpine. I chased him up the street to call a truce. The silly Clark Kent pulls out a deuce deuce. Little did he know I had a loaded 12 gauge. One sucker dead, LA Times front page. Cause the boys in the hood are always hard. You come talking that trash, we'll pull your car. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, boy, cause I ain't been shit. another.